Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I am so happy today to have with me Jeannie Okamoto, a Vashon author, editor, and publisher. I talked to Jeannie a few years ago when I was in the midst of figuring out how to publish my book, Meeting the Muse After Midlife, and we had a delightful conversation because it's not every author who decides to go on to create a small publishing company that can help other authors bring their work into the world. But that was, Jeannie, thank you so much. That was a great conversation. And I've watched as you have helped Vashon authors produce some really wonderful work. You had that book on memoir a few years ago. And this year, I believe it was this year, Vashon, mostly Vashon, poets have produced a book through you called Grief, Age, Love. And it's wonderful. Was it this year that it came out?
Yes, it came out in just this past, really August. And then we had a launch at VCA in September. And also I wanted to thank you for inviting me because I love to talk about Vashon poets.
I love that too, and I love what you've done. And I had Margaret Ronconi on the show just a couple of weeks ago, and that was fun. And we were getting into the topic of poetry in the community, which is something I think we're going to cover as well. But first, spoiler alert, I'm going to praise your book.
Go for it.
Go for it. Thank you. Because, you know, when someone says, I have a book of poetry, you know, you might want to read, you know, I'll go, sure, game, okay, whatever. But I'm not necessarily going to stay up late at night to read it. But last night, I did. To read your book. And what, read your book. I call it your book, but it's really by a collection of mostly local authors. But I loved it. I loved it. And I was swept right into it. In part because the topic is so timely for those of us who are getting older, grief, loss, age. How does anybody over 60 not have to face those big three? And the great thing about the book that again I really loved was that it felt intimate. You know, a lot of times, you know, we're having coffee with friends. We're, unless something's really happened, we don't bare our hearts about the small things that are our relationship with grief, loss, and age. I mean, it's not necessarily coffee conversation, although with some of my friends it is. But the greatest acknowledgement of all came when my husband, who sometimes picks up my books, you know, and just sees what I'm up to, he started reading the book at breakfast, and he said, we have to buy this book for our friends. This is so good. And he didn't have any, you know, any reason to have to say that.
Yeah.
So you get double acknowledgments from the Fox Brown household.
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah, and so I loved because most of the authors were local, but not all. And your brother was one who is not local. So it sounds like he was part of the inspiration for the book.
Absolutely.
Could you tell me how you decided to create a book like this?
Well, my brother is and was a draft resister, left the United States for Canada in 1968.
Wow.
And this is not the first book of poetry that I've edited and published. It was in, I think, 2011 that, and I should just say he became a Canadian citizen. He's a Quaker. He's a teacher. He taught school in prison, in a prison, and he has written poetry most of his life, and I'm a huge fan of his poetry. I love it. But he's never done anything about, you know, what we call the business of writing. submitting places and all that kind of thing. He writes when the spirit moves him on whatever subject it is, and then he'll send it to family and friends. So I had quite a collection of his poetry. I'm, you know, as I said, his biggest fan, or one of his biggest fans. And in 2011, his wife died of cancer, and she was the first one of our generation to die. And it really got my attention for so many reasons, not only just the loss and grieving and all of that, but for years I had thought, someday I am going to publish Roger's poetry. You know, someday I really want to do that. And so I, you know, was in the back burner with all kinds of someday I'm going to things. And but when Judy died, it was like, someday is now. And it was sort of an epiphany. And so I decided to publish his poetry. By then, I had my very tiny publishing company up and going. And so I got in touch with him. And I said, Raj, I really, Roger is his name, but family calls him Raj. So I really want to publish your poetry. And he said, well, that's great, but I don't want to be the only poet in the book. And so I hadn't lived on Vashon all that long, but I did know Ann Spires and Jill Andrews because our daughters knew each other in Seattle. So I met with them and said, I'm sure there's a lot of poets on Vashon. And so they gave me a list of people, probably most of them I did not know. But they gave me their contact information. I sent out this sort of call for submission. And I said, I will publish anything you write if, on one condition, that it is an accessible poem, which means I have to understand the poem. Because there's all kinds of poetry. I don't get it. And I don't know what it's about. And I don't think I have the literary expertise and knowledge to know a lot of the literary references. I don't know what they're talking about. So I want a poem that I get, you know, that really, that I understand. That was only my only criteria.
I love that because I think for some of us, that's what gives poetry a bad name. Mm. Not that those poems might not be beautiful,
sure,
and great in their own domain, but people, it kind of divide the world, like those who get poetry because it's sort of the effete, intellectual, artistic, mm-hmm, not us world. And then the rest of us who are, you know, figure, well, we're not poets and we don't really understand poetry. Until you hear your friends, mm-hmm, creating something that sounds like them, and the thoughts are accessible and the images are real, and you're let in, mm-hmm, to a very lovely private conversation with somebody, mm-hmm, that you care about.
Well, and I think the important thing is it resonates with your experience, because there's kind of an existential loneliness for all of us, no matter how rich our relationships are. It's part of the human condition. And when you read something from some unknown person, or maybe someone you know, but it totally speaks to you, touches your heart, it helps you. It's in the quote that I use, that I wrote in the introduction by this Irish poet, Brendan Kennelly, he talked about it was a great gift to humanity because isolated souls can connect. Poetry makes a bridge between souls, and that's how I feel about it. And this one, well, going back to the one we did in 2011, all poems came in. I was very excited. I loved it. My brother was really, you know, thrilled about it. And we, all sales, everything I do with Endicott and Hugh Books, any proceeds go to nonprofits. So with this one, we chose Vashon Community Care, RIP, and we had a launch there. My mother had lived there before she died.
That was for the first poetry book.
That was the first poetry,
yes,
book. We had a launch there for that, and many of the poets came and read, and it was just a really wonderful experience. So I loved it so much. Someday I want to do this again. And I think probably I thought the time was this year for me on so many levels with what's happening in our country, the absolutely horrendous destruction of everything we see, the cruelty, the inhumanity. I mean, we're all doing what we can, but you can get tipped over by this stuff. And turning to books helps me a lot at theater and writing and all of that. And I just felt the need to immerse myself in a project like this.
And I am so glad you did. And I think you're right on, because if there comes a point I don't want to talk about what's happening beyond a certain point because it's so devastating and depressing. But I need to be in conversation with the world about it. And so theater, art, poetry are ways that I converse. You know, and I hear what my, you know, what fellow souls are feeling about it in a way that kind of goes, I mean, that's funny because poetry is words, but in a way it takes us beyond the words.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's an emotional connection.
Yeah, yeah. I know I was reading a column that the poet Mark Nepo does, and I love his writing. It's very much in line with what you're talking mm-hmm. about, accessible, real, heartfelt, and all. And also that sense that this is what we need to fill our mm-hmm. souls at this, you know, devastating time.
One of the poets in the book, and there's just so many wonderful Vashon poets, and I should say before I talk about Myrna Hecht, who I'm about to talk about, that there's a range. The title is Grief, Age, Love, and the overarching theme is aging, of course, and then grief is such a part of aging, and love, the people we love, the people we've loved and lost. But there are many poems in this book that are funny. They're charming and funny and whimsical. My brother's poems are very whimsical. Mike Feinstein has some wonderful haikus, and they're just delightful.
They're so short, and they go right
yes,
in, and
they
they're
do.
Just like, you know,
yeah.
like a little candy or something.
Yeah,
go,
the candy. That's such a, yes, exactly. Another one is Janie Starr had a funny poem. Beth White had a funny poem. And the ones who just cracked everybody up at the launch, we had a launch in September at VCA for the book, was Rebecca Graves. It was really funny and wonderful. So mixed in with all the ones just about heartbreak, and just the sadness, the difficulty, the challenges are these really wonderfully funny poems. So circling back to Myrna, when I contacted the poets and said it was, you know, the overarching thing was aging and anything within the theme, and again, same thing, accessible. I have to understand the poem, you know, because I think I'm kind of a lowbrow person, actually. And so Myrna wrote me, and she said that at this time in her life, she is grieving for our broken world. And so her poems might not fit the tone of this book. And I said, I think it's really important. I think any time we have any opportunity to connect with anybody, we can't look away like the Germans did in the 1930s. We have to witness, and then for, I think, most people, there is some sort of action, whatever it is, that you take. So I felt that it was really important to us really talk about Myrna's phrase, grieving for the broken world. So she has a couple of poems about her father that are very personal, but she has a poem about Gaza, and she has a poem about gun violence. And I just felt it was important. And I do refer to what's happening in our world in my foreword about
yes.
it.
I thought it was brilliant. I was brilliant.
And wow.
just for the record, we're talking with Jeannie Okamoto about the book she helped publish called Grief, Age, and Love. Grief, Age, Love. And Myrna Hecht's poems in there. I know Myrna loves culinary images, and it's almost like this was an ingredient, a bit bitter, that gave depth and fit in wonderfully. I thought it was actually a needed contribution to the book.
Yeah, thank you.
Even though, you know, you can see people won't be able to see this, the tears in my eyes thinking about her poems, her poem on Gaza, her poem on gun violence, because it just hits you.
Yeah.
It hits you through the small human loss of a life that totally devastates.
Yeah.
And I know I was in a poetry group with Myrna at the with the last Trump election, you know, when we were devastated.
Yes.
And we were trying to hold it together
in
poetry. Writing poetry together was a little bit of a lifeline.
Yeah.
And I think it still is. So when she wrote her comment, because her those poems don't deal directly with age, and yet isn't this what we think about with age?
Yeah.
You know, what's our relationship to that which is broken and may never be fixed in our lifetime?
Yeah. In our lifetime.
Yeah.
But we have to hope.
We have to hope. Now, speaking a bit personally, you're married to Joe Okimoto, who is a great contributor in our community. Was his family affected by the internments?
They were incarcerated in 1942. His family, they were in the concentration camp in Poston, Arizona for 3.5 years. And Joe, his sister, brothers, American citizens. And he's speaking tonight. He's giving an introduction tonight before the lecture that's part of a series they're doing about American heroes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's what. And they're focusing on Fred Korematsu, who was one of the very important people who spoke out against the incarceration of Japanese Americans. People in the Asian community, particularly, and activists aren't saying internment anymore.
No,
it's a very mild phrase. These people were in a prison camp.
I get it. It's a concentration camp.
Absolutely. Yeah. A concentration camp doesn't mean you kill everyone.
No.
The real definition is reflects exactly imprisoned against your will. And this was for a political purpose, really.
Yeah.
And totally racist.
Totally, totally. And devastating. And that's why when you, like, Joe had a first-hand experience of what racism and a kind of tyranny, you know, that goes against the law, goes against the spirit of the Constitution, and in a sense parallels what we're seeing happening right now.
Yes.
How do you guys take it?
Well, he's a real activist. In fact, that's how we met in 1971. I was involved in civil rights, and he was too. And we had a mutual friend, Don Kazama was his name, who thought we would like each other, and we certainly did. We've been married 52 years.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And so that has just been his act, even though he, you know, Harvard MD, you know, went to Dartmouth, all this Ivy League stuff, and was a psychiatrist for, you know, over 40 years, medical director of Swedish hospitals, eating disorder unit, you know, really impressive resume academically. But his activism went hand in hand with that. He was involved with a demonstration at the University of Washington when they were trying to get union jobs for black contractors, and he was out there demonstrating with those guys. So it's very much part of who he is. And now he has a leadership role with an organization called Tsuru for Solidarity of Japanese Americans who are resisting, protesting what's happening to immigrants. And with the lack of due process, which is exactly what's happened to Joe and his family in that community. So he's really active in that.
Well, thank him for me. I really appreciate those efforts, because we all find our own way. And the activist path is one way to deal with that overwhelming, you know, despair that we can feel for what's happening. Poetry can be another, but they're both really needed right now. And I was so glad when I went into Wing Luke, the museum, several years ago. I saw that in their portrayal of what had happened to Asian immigrant mm-hmm. communities, they went one step further and started talking about the Islamic mm-hmm. and what was happening in the Islamic.
Yeah.
And I think around Mukai, our wonderful, the Mukai house that's a testament to the Japanese who were growing strawberries on the island prior to World War II, they also have come mm-hmm. out strongly.
Yeah.
That this isn't just about honoring what happened to the Japanese. It's
right.
It's saying never again.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah. So how do you find your sanity? Has writing helped you?
I think that animals help me.
Really? Tell me more.
And the birds help
me. Yeah.
Laura Lippman.
Yeah.
Who's has some poems about health challenges in her family in there. She has a strong one in there about birds. And I look at my I have an elderly little rescue dog, elderly like me, and I look at him and I think, and his name is Bert, and I think, he doesn't know who Trump is. And I find that very comforting. I read constantly. And I write, I had one of my children's books, Jake and Emma's Island Getaway. I did a play based on that, and we're going to do it for Chautauqua in March. And Joe's in the ukulele band, and I'm a Yuki groupie, so they're in almost the plays that I've had produced. The ukulele band is in it, so they're going to be in this one. And that is fun. Doing stuff for kids is really fun.
Yeah.
So I'm enjoying that. Hale Quackenbush, who has the lead in my new play, and he is in right now. I have to give a shout out to Rocky Horror.
Oh, he was great.
He was fabulous.
Great.
The whole cast was. Yes, it was just absolutely wonderful. And again, another great escape from the arts, you know, that just helps you, even though there's an underlying important message and accepting all of human sexuality, which I think is a wonderful message, but it's the music, the choreography, I can't say enough good about it. So, you know, those things help a lot. They really do.
They do. In terms of your own writing path, were you a writer already when you turned to children's books, or what? Tell me a little bit about your writing career.
Well, I started writing when I was 11 years old, and I had a newspaper on my block. And my next door neighbor and I, we wrote something that offended one of our neighbors. She dyed her hair kind of red, but we were all excited. We said, Mrs. Greenbaum lights up the neighborhood. We thought it was a compliment. Well, she didn't like it, called her mother, and that was the end of the newspaper, which was a great introduction to trying to be a published writer. I always had a dual career. I was a psychotherapist for 35 years, but always was writing. And I wanted to write for adults. I never had an interest in writing for children, and I should say, Joe and I have been married 52 years, but it's a second marriage. So my first marriage ended in divorce, and I wanted to find a book for my kids about that experience. And not nonfiction, but about characters who had gone through a divorce and they were okay, but one that didn't pull any punches about how hard it is, but also had humor, because that's, I see the world as a tragicomedy, and so there's humor in everything I write. So I wrote a book called My Mother Is Not Married to My Father, and it took me 5 years, and it was rejected 17 times. Then Putnam bought it, and that's how I got into children's books. And because they bought it and it did okay, they wanted more, so I stayed with that. And I was I wrote picture books, middle grade novels, and young adult novels. And and you know, when you get recognition, it helps you to want to keep going, although writing is probably the way I metabolize feelings and process the world a lot. When I moved to Vashon and moved over here in 04, I decided, and I had retired from my practice as a therapist. I thought, okay, now I'm going to write for my own age group, go back to what I had wanted all those years ago, although I loved writing kids' books. But I'm going to write for my own age group, which is old people, because there are not a lot of books about older people. And it's an incredibly interesting, and there's your word, interesting, but and challenging time. You know, you're losing your friends. Your health isn't. You don't look the same. You don't move the same. You have to make your peace with things that are with your families. Maybe you're very close, but maybe there's some relationships that you really aren't all that you had hoped. It's a challenging time, and you have to find, you know, things that help, reasons you want to get up in the morning. I mean, I've always believed that the secret to aging is to have a project. It doesn't matter what it is. It really doesn't. Maybe it's walking the dog or a garden, or can be books, music, art, whatever, but or starting a little business or something. I mean, whatever interests you to have some sort of project. And for me, the most liberating thing was to get away from corporate publishing, and it has been so much fun. A number of my friends who had, you know, books published by big corporate New York publishers, they'd gone out of print, and I wanted to bring them back into print for them. So I've done a number of that for friends.
Wow.
And I brought some of my books back into print, and then I started wanting to do original stuff of my own, and it was so liberating. I mean, I do work with a good editor who freelances. She works for Penguin, and she freelances because I think you need a good professional set of eyes who's going to be able to say, I don't think this part works. Can you expand this? Or, you know, whatever help, and that you have to be able to hear that and respect the person, because five different people are going to tell you five different things.
And a good editor is golden.
Yeah,
just
really important.
Golden.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, have you published about aging? Because what you were talking about felt like it was right on.
The first one I did, The Love Ceiling was about women and creativity was the theme. These are all fiction.
Uh-huh.
It's all fiction. And that one was the first one that I did. And then I think the next one may have been Walter's Muse. And again, older characters, retired people. Reinvention of Albert Paw, that one was older people, and George Beasley's Better Angel, and then Drama Doc produced a play that I wrote based on the reinvention of Albert Paw, and then more recently, we have some fabulous older actors on the island, and like many of us who are older, elderly, have trouble memorizing lines, but they are absolutely fabulous. So I've done staged readings, written plays for a staged reading, and done, Drama Doc did one of those, which Turned the Corner George, based on my book, George Beasley's Better Angel. And then I directed and produced two of them with the help of Patricia Kelly, who's just a terrific actor. And she was really wonderful. And we did stage readings, and we got these older actors. And, you know, we did it at Bethel. And again, free admission, because, as I say, you get the money out of the equation, and you can really have fun. You just can have fun. You're not judging it by whether it's made money or anything. You're doing it for the joy of it. And we had a full house, 300 people for each play.
Oh, fantastic.
And one of the things I have to just add, Elizabeth Shepherd is a gem. She has been so supportive of everybody on the arts, but she's been wonderful for the stuff I've wanted to do, because it's kind of quirky. It doesn't really fit
Yeah,
a lot of stuff.
But just I did a VOV interview with Liz.
Oh, did you?
And
yeah.
Shout out, Liz. We love you. Thank you for all you're doing for the community and the Beachcombers on both fronts.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
We are blessed, as we are with a number of people.
Oh.
It, the riches. And I love what you're doing to be able to both highlight the sort of inside track on aging. That's not the meme. It's not the stereotype. It's let's talk the way you and I might talk. Let's talk about what's real. Let's talk about, let's take away the glamour, but also take away that ain't it bad side and really go in and see what's there. Because I think a lot of us are hungry for those kinds of conversations.
Yeah.
And then to bring out older actors. Oh my gosh, these are, that's what an amazingly wonderful combination.
It was, they're so talented and it was so much fun. The other thing I should say, I've led a writing group. It's kind of a memoir writing group, but honestly, anything anybody wants to write is fine. So we have people writing poetry, personal essays, all kinds of stuff. And I've done that since, I think, 2008 or something. But digital publishing, and I think when you and I talked about this, has opened up the world. No longer are the corporate huge publishers the gatekeepers for who gets to be in print. I mean, there used to be such a stigma against it. If you published your own stuff, it was a like a vanity press, and there was sort of a knock on it, and how could it be good, because no big publisher never did it. And you have to get through that. And now I think that stigma isn't really there anymore. There's a lot of hybrid publishers where authors are paying part of the funds and others. But
yeah.
I just wanted to just add this one thing about how important or how just gratifying it is to see your work in print and be able to give it to somebody. And so I published the work of the people in this memoir group so that they were able to do that.
And I know at least one of the authors, and it was really meaningful to be able to share and to save, in this case, him, the steep learning curve of how do you get your work out into the world. Because even though you can do it, doesn't mean that it's necessarily an easy ride.
Yeah, it is really tough. And in this digital age where, you know, everything is so fleeting.
Yes.
And AI, I don't even get how that's going to wreck everything. But, but you know, to have a real print book.
Right.
I think it gives it just another dimension.
Right.
Because the world itself, everything disappears so quickly.
And it's interesting because when I was looking at publishing, I knew it would be a huge shot in the dark to ever try and get a traditional. And when I started out, people were saying, do you have a following of 20,000? By the time I was ready to publish, it was, do you have a following of 100,000?
Oh, wow.
Or maybe more than 100,000? Because they're all betting that they can find the next Michelle Obama.
Yep.
Who will save the company and save the year.
Exactly.
And all. And I said, well, I'm not even going to go that route. Why waste my time?
Oh, yeah.
The thing that it does require, though, is that you understand how to do it and that you get really great resources and that you pay for it yourself. And so one of the things about creativity after midlife is that like you were able to do at Bethel Church, when you can take money out of the equation on some level, or having to make a lot of money or having to be famous or having to, you know, fill in the blanks, then the world's yours. There's so much that can be done. But you have to sort of reframe it so that you're happy with the gift that you're giving, not measured by that other external reward.
Yes, and really realistic expectations.
Yeah.
You know, it's generally not going to be on the New York Times bestseller
list. It's almost certainly not going to be. Have they ever noticed?
And you really have to really understand and realize you're, you know, not going to make a living at this. The other thing I have to say, though, anybody who can do it, we are really privileged. We are really privileged because economically we can afford to do something.
Right.
And work really hard and spend a lot of time at something where we don't have to worry about the money. That is pure privilege.
Pure
because
privilege.
So many elderly people are not in that situation and really have to often, you know, scramble to have a quality of life and often continue working well beyond when they're really able to do it, but they have to do it. Or there's grandmothers who have to take care of children when they're older. So it's a privilege.
It's a privilege
of people who are in an economic group where they're able really to explore all this stuff.
Definitely. And I think it has a couple sides. One is just the tragedy that we haven't figured out a way to sustain a very important part of our population.
Yeah.
The number of people who aren't set up for retirement and who are disadvantaged from the get in the system.
Yeah.
And that gap between those who are advantaged and disadvantaged grows bigger every day. So my hat's off to people who are still going to be working into their 80s.
Yeah.
Just to survive. And even amongst those of us who have had more privilege, the models of what it takes to be an artist need to be reevaluated, I think. And when I was publishing, I did a funding campaign, not because I was disadvantaged in a certain sense, but because I felt like this is what we need to do for each other. Mm-hmm. We need to support each other's creative works.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to ask for a little help to help with the publishing mm-hmm. costs. But I'm also making a commitment that when my friends ask me for help with their new theater production mm-hmm. or with their artistic endeavors
sure.
or their music, that cannot pay for itself in the current commercial
yeah.
environment,
yeah.
I'm going to help them.
Yeah.
And I called it community-supported arts. And I still think that that is so vital, that
yeah.
we need to, those who can need to reach out so that mm-hmm. we have community art. And that's not just for a few celebrities who break the ceiling and make it into the mega, you know, stratosphere somewhere.
Right.
And so going back to what you're doing, Jeannie, I think you have been someone who has understood that and also helped. Because by publishing the writers that you did with the memoir writing, and now the poets who, yes, they could do chapbooks, many of them have,
mm-hmm.
but to give them an opportunity to share their voices in this common area and not make it so hard to get out, that's an incredible gift.
Well, I've loved it. I have really, really loved it. And I think the other thing that helped me get this perspective in an odd way, I had back in the last century, I had one nonfiction book and I had a book tour. So I was on Oprah and CNN and the Today Show, Good Morning America, and all that stuff with this book. And the book did well. But I learned then how superficial that really was. And people and it was something that, you know, at first I thought, oh, this is gonna be really fun and really good. It isn't. For me, it wasn't any fun. And probably fun is one of the biggest motivating factor in my life, what I decide I want to do. But it really did. I mean, I think there are some people who are fed from an audience, but I'm not one of those people. Not that I want people to read my stuff. Of course you do. You want to connect with people. But having been a therapist for 35 years, I really value a connection with one other person. That's what feeds me. And so I learned that about myself in a really big way, because I thought I was going to love all that. And I've heard of writers who go on book tours say, well, yeah, it's okay for the book, but it takes me away from my writing. And I really understand that.
Yeah.
Because I think first of all, I think real writers are people who really write, period. That's a really strong belief of mine. So whether you're published or by whom, it's just, if you're writing, that's part of who you are. And it's something that you just need to do and enjoy doing. And for those who want to publish their stuff, I think if they really love the writing, it's much better than the dreams of what will happen when the book is out there in the world, because maybe you'll connect with people, hopefully, and maybe you won't. But you have to love that process. And that became clear to me after I did have a taste of, you know, a little bit of that publicity stuff.
Oh, that is so great, because I can say that, but I've never been on Oprah or had that level of publicity.
But it was, you know, it was really helpful. And, you know, if my books had taken off on that, like if the novel, the first novel for old people had been picked up, I probably would still be at it with corporate publishers and doing that stuff. Although Anne Tyler, an author, I love her work because it's just charming and quirky. She never publicizes her stuff. She's someone who loves to write, and she does it, and they put it out there, and it's successful. That's a great, that would be sort of
That's sort of every writer's dream.
It really is. Yeah, unless some people do love being on, you know, spotlight and stuff.
Yeah, I think, I mean, yeah, that could be something that feeds them in and of itself, but it's interesting because I think, and this is a whole other subject that we won't probably get into, but in this world of AI, where you couldn't write a book using AI, I sit and go, well, what is going to be the difference between a very slickly produced AI book and something that comes from a writer? And it's heart and soul.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing that you feel, like when you give your book to one person and you know you have a connection, they read it. Or you're writing and you know that you want to, it's the heart that's sending out a message through the poems, through the writing and all. And hopefully that will never be replicated. And hopefully we'll be able to tell the difference.
Yes, that's such a good point.
Between a perfectly generated, beautiful prose, whatever. But on some level, soulless.
Yes.
Yeah.
I totally agree. One thing is, I don't want to knock people who love the spotlight. I mean, one of our sons is a musician.
Yeah.
And they may play the same set over and over, but he has said the audience is different each time. The energy is different each time, and that feeds them, and there's this whole synergistic thing going on. And so, you know, and they love the spotlight.
Well,
and that's
for them,
fine. That's fine.
Because I actually love performing and presenting, and for me, it's a moment of sort of being in the moment and letting the spirit come through me.
You know,
so it's quite alive like that. But that is different from the world of promoting.
Yeah.
Where the end goal is always to, you know, show how great you and your work were, as opposed to just being there with an audience and having that amazing connection.
Yeah.
As we begin to wrap up, I'm curious that you haven't tried to write poetry.
Did you? Oh, yeah, and it was awful.
Oh, I bet it would.
No, it was. It was just terrible. And, you know, poets, I believe, have, the ones at least that I really love, have just an exquisite talent for metaphor. I think that's what makes a good, for me, you know, and again, it's really subjective, but for me, and there's a writer in this writing group that I have. He is just brilliant at metaphor. I don't know how he does it. It's like breathing. And the things that I do and enjoy doing, because I think you enjoy doing what you seem to be able to do. I love character. I love dialogue. And I love interaction between characters. Poetry, you really have to, I think, for good poetry, and again, it's subjective, but you have to be really good at metaphor. And I do not have that ability. And I think often we love the things that we appreciate so much what we cannot do. And my poems were, Sally, they were awful.
Well, you know, I think we go back to the word that you used a few minutes ago called fun.
Yeah.
That, you know, post 60, 70, 80, it's important to choose what brings us alive. And if writing poetry, even crude poetry, brings us alive, then I'd say to anybody, go do it. I'm learning to draw. And I don't draw well, but I figure if I draw every day, eventually I'll be a little better.
Yes,
and it's
exactly.
The same for the quest for metaphor. If I were to commit there, and I don't have time, but I think anything that opens our eyes to the world is worth, you know, is worth pursuing if it's in line with what we're called to do and if it's fun. Yeah. So I want to bring people back to your wonderful book, Grief, Age, Love, with a whole group of wonderful Vashon poets and a few poets from outside the area who are also fantastic. You can buy the book at the Vashon Bookshop, and they also are represented by bookshop.org, right? Mm-hmm. So that anybody who's out of the area and wants the book can go and find it.
And I should add, all proceeds go to the Vashon Senior Center.
I love that, too. I heard that, and I think that's great because it's also one of the fabulous organizations.
It's amazing what they do.
They do. I love them. Shout out to the Senior Center.
Yes.
But let me just close with one thing, because it relates to writing poetry, drawing, and reading poetry as well, like reading your book. If you can have a half an hour to do something like this that actually has you see the world with new eyes, that opens your heart to what's out there, sometimes right in front of you, but has you experience in different ways, I say that's a half an hour that's blessedly spent. And that's what I felt reading your book.
Thank you. I really appreciate the time to talk about it, because we have so many talented people on the island, and these poets are exquisite. And I'm so glad that your husband, Steve, said he wanted to give it as gifts to people.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really great. And again, proceeds to the Vashon Senior Center.
And thank you, Jeannie, both for being here and being such a support to the creative life of the island.
Thank you. It is truly my pleasure. I really love it.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon 101.9 FM for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.